All right, everybody, I want to welcome you now to the Progressive Care conference call as it relates to the 2018 annual report. Before we get started, let me read the cautionary statement regarding forward-looking statements. Statements contained herein that are not based on current or historical fact are forward-looking in nature and constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of Section 27A of the Securities Act of 1933 and Section 21E of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. Such forward-looking statements reflect the company's expectations about its future operating results, performance, and opportunities that involve substantial risk and uncertainties. These statements include, but are not limited to, statements regarding the intended terms of the offering, closing of the offering, and use of proceeds from the offering. When used herein, words like anticipate, believe, estimate, upcoming, plan, target, intend, and expect, and similar expressions as they relate to Progressive Care Incorporated, its subsidiaries, or its management, are intended to identify such forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are based on the information currently available to the company and are subject to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors that could cause the company's actual results, performance, prospects, and opportunities to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these forward-looking statements. So we're joined today, of course, by the CEO of the company, Sheetal Mars. Sheetal, the floor is yours.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm happy that we were able to get our financial statements out and audited, not only on time, but a little early, so we can have some time to go through everything. I'm going to go through the financial statements fairly quickly, and I usually like to devote a good amount of time to going through the numbers, but we have a lot to talk about today, and I don't want to take up too much time. So we'll go through the balance sheet. The balance sheet is fairly similar to what it was last year. Our cash position is down, but we've used a lot of our cash that we had this year for a number of initiatives that we've developed over the year, which includes development of the acquisition where we had Touchpoint, which, by the way, as we move forward throughout this year and the rest of the year, we will be talking about Touchpoint as Farmco 1002, or just talking about Farmco as a subsidiary for both, as they, so that way we can continue to have consistent branding and naming protocols for the company. Accounts receivable is about the same. Accounts receivable other, and I want to point out accounts receivable other because we don't have it on the 2017 balance sheet. Accounts receivable other right now is $351,000. About $340,000 is what we're expecting to get from Humana. As you all know, we achieved all of the benchmark scores. We are in the top 90th percentile of all pharmacies in Humana's network, so that's the top 10% or better. We only needed to be in the top 20% to get full bonus, to get the max bonus back. So that's the $5 DIR fee they collected throughout the year, plus another dollar that they give us for that superior performance. So the total recoupment back is $446,000 for 2018, of which we got $120,000 or so, and now we have that remaining balance to collect. They have 120 days from end of period to pay that out to us, so we're expecting that sometime in April to get the remaining balance of our performance bonus. Inventory is about the same. Prepaid expenses includes a certain amount for rental deposits and things like that. We have now going into goodwill. Goodwill is a result of the acquisition. So Farmco 1002, that's our Palm Beach location, so you have $290,000 worth of goodwill, and that is reflective of the vast majority of the purchase allocation. We paid about $300,000 for the company. That included its inventory And we bought the business with the tax ID and everything. So that includes his accounts receivables, his payables, and everything else. And so at the end of the day, even though the company did not was not cash flow positive or profitable when we bought it, we knew that going in because it takes upwards of $500,000 to $750,000 plus 6 months or more of time just to start the business from scratch. So we know that it was money well spent. We started well ahead of the game, putting that money towards that acquisition, and now it's starting to yield its dividends. Accounts payable and accrued liabilities is up. You're gonna see that with salaries, and because sales have grown significantly, our accounts payable has grown with it. Capital lease obligations, that's the new equipment. That's the Script Pro, that's the TCG. And unearned revenue, you'll notice that's up a little bit. Unearned revenue, and I'll explain that to you guys, is where we have billed the prescription. So that's that last day of the year where the prescription has been billed, but it has not yet been delivered to the patient. So we record revenues when it has been delivered to the patient. Notes payable, you're going to have the mortgage in notes payable. We paid $1.8 million for the new building, and so that asset is now on the books under property, plant, and equipment. You're going to see an asset allocation there for $1.8 million, and then we have the mortgage where we had $1.5 million in the mortgage and $300,000 as a back-end convertible note. That back-end convertible note we can pay off at any time. It matures, and it is convertible after a year, but we're hoping to work with the note holder and figure out a way to either pay that off or mitigate some of that dilutive factor that comes with the convertible note. So going to revenue. Revenue, let's go to the profit and loss statement and revenue. Revenue was up. We have $20.9 million in revenue compared with 2017, which is $20 million, 20.1. That includes about $600 and change of revenue from Farmco 1002. That also is going to be inclusive of revenue from 340B entities. Revenue from 340B was up. It's up about 200% over 2017, and it's growing. And we're working with our 340B-covered entities so that the fees that we get and the services we provide are properly valued. We know that the new contracts have some higher fees to us than the ones that we had even in 2016 and 17, and we're pursuing even more contracts. And the reason we're pursuing these 340B contracts is servicing the specialty community comes with margins that are either at cost or below cost. So our reimbursements from third-party payers for certain HIV medications can be below what our wholesale acquisition price is. And so it makes much better sense to work with a 340B covered entity to service those patients where we're at least getting paid something for those prescriptions as opposed to taking the loss. And we're not one of those companies that turns patients away based on whether the medication is profitable to us or not. We want to make sure that we provide adequate service to everybody who comes through our doors. Bad debt expense is increased a little bit. That's including bad debt that we've written off from Farmco 1002. And it also includes a little bit of increase in Farmco 901, which is our Miami location, just because of simply increased script amount. I wanted to back up a little bit, and I missed it, talking about cost of revenue. Cost of revenue is up, and the reason cost of revenue is up, cost of revenue for us includes PBM fees. It includes all of our DIR fees, GER fees, and things like that. It also includes the factor for the drug costs and the supplies and things of that nature. With cost of goods, you'll notice that the cost of goods as a percentage of revenue has also gone up. That is a two-pronged problem. One, the cost of drugs as a general rule of thumb goes up every year. So the same drugs we bought last year cost us more to buy this year. The second thing is reimbursements go down. And reimbursements have gone down significantly for medications that are compounded and specialty medications. So compounding has gone through two things. Either its reimbursements have gone down depending upon the medication, depending upon the compound, or it is simply not covered by the insurance company. And we saw that occurring April through June, where all of a sudden prescriptions that we had habitually been providing to our patients were no longer being covered by the insurance company, and there were no alternatives being covered by the insurance company. No, we could offer a cheaper compounded medication, and it would still not be covered by the insurance company. And the ones that are covered will either be covered at cost, at drug acquisition cost, or below cost. So you'll notice that we're now not realizing a lot of the benefits of compounded medications where we were getting 40 or 50% margins in 2015 and 2016. Now it's normalized to standard medications, and standard medications come between 18 and 22% margins, and that's what we're seeing here. So we have about 22% margins. You're going to have share-based compensation in this, and now that's fully amortized over the course of the year, fully vested, and those shares are now given to each of the employees that have earned them. So that's $600,000. That's a one-time cost for this year. We don't anticipate giving another share like bonuses in 2019. So this share-based compensation won't reoccur in 2019. Other selling and general administrative expenses, we've kept pretty much flat. We have added more staff. We have increased advertising expenses. So that will account for the vast majority of the increase in general administrative expenses. But we run a fairly lean and tight ship. We don't try to spend on anything extravagant or anything unnecessary. Every dollar is watched. So you're not going to see heavy increases in that this year, except for we do have an addition of advertising expenses in this year. We've produced our first commercial that is now running on TV, and we're looking at other advertising avenues for some of the new products and services that I'll talk about later. Change in fair value derivative, that applies to removing the Chicago Venture note in 2018. All of that was paid off. So you have interest expense and change in fair value derivative that kind of offset each other here. And now those notes were all paid off. And I'll go into the notes that we took on this year and towards the end of the call. Provision for income taxes, that's just income taxes that we've already paid to the state of Delaware. We don't anticipate paying any income tax on 2019 due to the loss that we have incurred this year and net operating losses that we had from prior years. So total net income loss is $1.6 million. Again, $600,000 of that is the share-based compensation. We have depreciation and interest expense, so not all of that is cash-based loss. And I will talk about now where the majority of the cash-based loss is, and that's about $791,000. I'm going to talk about it in three pieces. The first is being one issue that is rather disconcerting for us in that we had no control over it. We have PBMs in 2018 that instituted a policy where they executed contracts in the middle of the year, and then that changed their contractual rate that they are required to pay us going back to the beginning of the year. So there are retroactive contractual adjustments. So what we had already dispensed, what we had already given to patients, was retroactively recouped based on new contractual rates. One of the things that's interesting about our industry is the number that we see on the computer, the number that they that we adjudicate a claim for, that we can expect to be paid for our services, is not a real number. It can say, if I bill a claim and it says that I'm supposed to be paid $100, very rarely do I actually get $100. Now, with the retroactive contractual adjustment, they took that even a step further, meaning we were operating under a contract, the 2017 contract, through the middle of 18. When they executed the new contract, they said that execution date, even though all the prescriptions have been billed and dispensed, fall under the new contractual rate. And so that resulted in approximately $120,000 contractual rate adjustment that occurred at the end of the year. There was nothing we could do about it. There was nothing we could do to stop it. There was no mitigating that circumstance, and it's the entire industry. That adjustment is based on a concept called generic effective rate. Now, generic effective rate is where they take the average wholesale price and reduce that by a certain percentage. Now, that percentage, when they do that reduction, can be below cost of acquiring the drug. So I'll give you an example. If we have a drug that costs $2,000 to buy and it has an AWP of $2,600, if they say you only get 17% of AWP, that's what your reimbursement is, you can talk about spending $1,300 to $1,800 per script of that drug, meaning you basically subsidize the coverage on that medicine. And so that's industry-wide. That's every pharmacy got hit with the same. The contracts are the same no matter what independent pharmacy you go to. I'm assuming the chain pharmacies have a better deal. But those are things that we can't foresee and we can't anticipate. Nobody informed us of the contractual rate adjustment. The money was just gone. Then we have DIR fees that have gotten significantly more aggressive and less likely to be returned to us given our performance. Humana is the only PBM that allows you to get all of your DIR fees back if you perform within their metrics. And they give you those metrics, and they lay it out for you, and they let you monitor how well you do throughout the year. Every month you can see where you're falling behind or where you're doing well so you can take corrective action through the rest of the year. All other PBMs allow either take the DIR fees with no chance of getting it back, or they allow for a partial return. And they don't give you any idea of how they're doing their measurements. So there's no way for us to make any corrective action if a patient had fallen into gap, or for us to appeal what data they're looking at. So those DIR fees are fairly aggressive in 2018. They're even more aggressive in 2019. Let's talk about the last piece of this puzzle, which is what occurred with compounding. And as I already said, between April and June, we saw significant reimbursement contraction and benefits restriction, meaning medications that we would see even a 20% margin fell to 10%. Medications that were covered all of a sudden are no longer covered, just cut off across the board. So we do, even though we're doing the same number of compounding prescriptions, and we're lucky that we're doing it because we have a patient base that relies on these compounds to, one, keep them off of opioids, and two, forget about opioids, have better quality of life. These are people that can't walk that are now able to walk because of our compounds. They can't move their shoulder, now able to use their shoulder. These are patients in pain for a number of reasons. These are patients that can't swallow oral medication. They rely on our compounds to live their life, and they continue to stick by us. We've been able to either switch them to cash-based formulas or to other medications or other options for them so that they stick with us, and that's been a good thing. But you'll see that revenues from compounding are significantly down, and the gross margins on compounding are significantly down. I want to move on from here to the remainder of the loss, which is Pharmco 1002. As I said before, we spent $300,000 to acquire the business. We spent another $300,000 developing the business. This includes integration. This includes rebranding. This includes advertising. This includes staffing and things like that to support all of the integration and implementation of the Farmco brand into that model. Now, they were already fairly synergistic. However, there were a number of things that had to be implemented for us to get the appropriate data. Able to recoup some of this in 2019. So we're moving very well in 2019 with Farmco 1002, and it's growing, and we're adding new clinics and new patients, and our formula there, our model there is working really well. We've added a lot of great staff, and we're continuing to build out that location to do USP 800 for hazardous compounding prescriptions. That includes any hormone powders and things like that. And we built out the warehouse space for a more efficient workflow and more staff as they grow. And we're seeing pretty steady growth here in 2019 for Farmco 1002. So that answers pretty much all of the 2018. I want to talk about 2019 a little bit just before we get to questions and answers. 1002 is looking like it's going to grow and start adding to our cash flow. Farmco 901 in Miami Beach is growing its prescription count month over month. We're doing very well. We're adding a new clinic. We've realized some benefits of some good partnerships with MSOs and other doctors and doctors' organizations who are recognizing our superior performance. And now we are looking forward to moving into the new building and really capitalizing on this growth. And we're working on new advertising and promotion strategies to build upon all this momentum. And, you know, Farmco as a brand is an exceptional pharmacy. We've built recognition for that. We've built word of mouth for that. And now we're on the precipice of building that recognition for being much more than just a one-store location. We're looking forward to being a four-store location this year. We're looking forward to being recognized as a major brand and a major player in Florida. And then we can look at expanding that brand to the rest of the states as we promote ourselves and promote what we do to all the insurance companies and the PBMs and see if we can work out new strategies with them and new programs direct with the insurance companies to promote our products and services. So now I know we have a lot of questions. Let's get to those so that I can get you guys off this call in a reasonable amount of time.
Absolutely, and thanks for that, Sheetal. And I want to thank all the listeners and your investors and shareholders who sent in their questions. You can continue to do so. Just like last time, we will have other interviews with Sheetal. So we got an overwhelming response this last time, and we've grouped them into some categories so that, like Sheetal said, we can get you guys on and off this call and get you all the information you need. So first, Sheetal, let's get an update on the acquisition.
So the FPRX, We did the soft closing, and I'm going to call it the soft closing of FPRX. We signed all the material agreements. All of those agreements are disclosed. This is one of the proudest things that we've accomplished in 2019 is executing on this acquisition. FPRX is about the same size as Farmco Miami. They do about $18 million in sales. That has maintained over these couple of months. So we are looking at, with the soft closing, I'm going to explain the process right now. First, we have to file a notification with the state Medicaid agency, so the Agency for Healthcare Administration in Florida, letting them know that a change of ownership is taking place. You have to do that 60 days in advance of a hard closing. So we cannot incorporate FPRX's financial performance in our consolidated financial statements until Medicaid recognizes and releases us from that 60-day notification window. That looks like it's going to happen in May. It could be the beginning of May, it could be the end of May, but we're looking at May because the day after we signed those papers, we filed the notification to Medicaid. Several other steps in that process. So once Medicaid is cleared, we're going to do a hard closing. The hard closing will release $1 million from escrow to the sellers of FPRX. At that point, the business is ours. The remainder of the funds are paid out over time, and the reason we did that was so that we could ensure retention of this business. We bought future cash flows of FPRX. They do about $500,000 in annual earnings, and we want to make sure that stays. We want to make sure their 20,000 prescriptions a month stay. We want to make sure their relationships with their doctor's offices and clinics and networks in Orlando stay. So we've staggered the remainder of the payments to be post change of ownership and for 24 months post closing. What that does for us is now we can consolidate it. That brings us to about 50,000 prescriptions a month in 2019, where once they're consolidated, we're looking at June, latest July, where we're going to start reporting their financial performance in our consolidated financials. If Pharmco, the Pharmco brands today do $30,000 prescriptions in sales, adding another 20,000, that's 50,000. And then we should be close to the high $30 million range towards the end of the year. The reason it's not essentially double is because we're only closing halfway through the year. So if they do $20 million in sales this year, we'll take about half of that. And so we'll be in the $30 million revenue or more. There's a lot of value in FPRX on top of the earnings, on top of the increase in sales. They have access to the Orlando market. So now we're extending to that I-4 corridor. We're now extending the ability to provide service to that Daytona to Tampa area, bringing us to a lot larger retirement community where our services are very valuable. And so now we're expanding to not just three counties or four or five counties in South Florida where the vast majority of our patients live. We're adding another five counties that we can service once we have that location established in Orlando. The addition of that revenue also provides us with the ability to leverage our patient base and have better relationships with MSOs, have better relationships with doctors groups, have better relationships, most importantly, with insurance providers. If we tell them what we're doing with all of these patients and the fact that we have $40 million in sales, we start becoming a brand worth recognizing and contending with, and that allows us to have a much better position with all of the players in our industry. So FPRX will be fully closed. We're going to talk about doing audited financials. They run and have run historically on a hybrid cash basis. We did do due diligence on those sales. We did monitor all of their collections, all of their cash payable, all of their fixed assets, making sure there was nothing that wasn't auditable. We have to make some changes to the presentation of their financial statements in order to do audited financials, and we know to go to the SEC, we're going to need a minimum of 2 years of audited financials of FPRX plus a stub, and as soon as we do the hard closing in May-June, we will be able to move forward with doing those audited financials this year. So that's the acquisition.
All right. Well, let's talk about an update on the SEC and uplisting.
So to piggyback on the FPRX, we have to do several things now. The next thing we have to do is do a shareholder meeting, and we are looking forward to releasing the agenda and timing of that meeting to give everybody advance notice of what we will be discussing during that meeting and get prepared to now do audited financials of FPRX, review and consider consent of an SEC auditor for Progressive Care as a consolidated entity, and then take that package and put it in an S-1. We're looking at, by the end of the year, having an S-1 prepared to be filed with the SEC. We would like to do it much faster. And as we work on this, we will provide all of our shareholders with updates as to where we stand in the process. If we can get the books in the proper presentation form for the SEC, and we can get a clean audit done in 45 days instead of 90, that all speeds up the timeline on this. But I want to give a reasonable estimate of when shareholders can look for, and I want to say the end of the year, for looking out for an S-1. And that brings us to the SEC. Once we're with the SEC, now we're a fully reporting company. That changes completely where we stand. Now we're at OTCQX instead of QB. We're no longer alternative filers. And a whole new group of investors and institutions can look at us and see what we have to offer, and we can look at different capital structures for any future financing, any future acquisition, any future capital needs for our growth through the SEC network instead of the alternative reporting network, which has presented its own challenges. But we want to make sure we're doing everything right. We want to make sure we're doing everything completely and most importantly, transparently for everybody. So as soon as we know more about where we are in the process, we will let the shareholders know. But the first thing to look out for now is the shareholder meeting. We'll have a lot of things to discuss during that meeting.
All right. Well, it seems like every time we do one of these calls, another state has come online. So people would like to know your update on the position on medical marijuana as well as CBD.
So medical marijuana and CBD there is very little consistency in the legal interpretation of how to integrate into that market. So I'm going to talk about Florida, and then we'll talk about it more generally. In Florida, medical marijuana is legal. It's now legal to have the long as the delivery method. And what I mean by that is now you can smoke it. So you can go to a dispensary, you can get buds, you can put it in whatever means you prefer and smoke it for your medicinal needs. That's great news. However, pharmacies are not allowed to be legal dispensaries of medical marijuana. For reasons that aren't entirely logical, but that is the way it stands. Florida also has a rule where you have to be vertically licensed, and they only gave out 20 or so licenses in the state. So it was essentially a lottery system where you have to own the seed, the plant, and the dispensary. So the seed, the growing, the lab or manufacturing, and the dispensary. You cannot be a dispensary that sources from multiple growers and multiple manufacturers. You have to be what they call vertically integrated. So for us to be in the medical marijuana space, we would have to own the land, the seed, the manufacturer, and the dispensary, which presents numerous challenges given that we are a pharmacy and it is not currently legal for the pharmacy to be a dispensary. With regard to CBD, CBD is legal, except it's not. And the reason there's so little consistency in the language is CBD, as it pertains to the farm bill, is legal to grow. Hemp is legal to grow. And CBD as an extract with 0.3% THC is also legal. However, in the state of Florida, Florida has come out that CBD cannot be stocked on the shelf, cannot be sold in a retail location, and is also especially not able to be sold at the pharmacy level. So medical-grade CBD, you cannot have it in the back cases of the pharmacy. The FDA has come out and said that CBD cannot be introduced in the food supply. So tinctures, capsules, and gummies and edibles are no longer are not allowed to be sold on the shelf. So that limits us to topicals. However, we have significant experience working with topicals, and we have sourced a 2 pharmacy grade CBD sources. So these CBD CBD oils, one is an isolate, the other is full spectrum, and we are working with that CBD, those 2 CBD lines that have been recommended to us by pharmacy wholesalers, and we are allowed to carry these brands on our shelves, and we're working on promoting those brands to our patient base for their medicinal benefits. However, we cannot make any specified medicinal claims, but we know that there are a number of studies and there's enough data out there that show the medical benefits and the health benefits of CBD. So we are working to promote these CBD lines that we can currently carry. The other issue we have is we want to work with a CBD manufacturer, and we're still in conversations with a number of large ones and small ones. The goal for us is to have some semblance of control over the manufacturing process. We don't simply want to white label, because there will be no differentiation between our product and any other product that you can order online. And if that's the case, there's no reason for someone to turn to us as opposed to what other CBD manufacturer they're already using. We want to create a product that we can stand behind, that we can talk about and help patients use on a regular basis, so we can help them with dosing, that we can help them with administration and all the things like that. We want to make sure that our product has something different to offer than all of the products out there. So that is what we're working on. Could we white label today? Yes. But like I said, it wouldn't be any different. So we're looking at how to manufacture something special. And with these lines, we have Ananda Professional and Pharmacana that we have on the shelf. With these lines, we'll be able to work with these manufacturers to create our own formulas and our own herbal-based, all-natural, non-GMO blends for CBD that we can maximize the health benefits. And also, we know that CBD has worked well with our alternative to pain management, our opioid alternative campaign. So we're working on that. And as soon as we have a structure in place, we will let everybody know. Just be mindful that we have a lot to protect here. We have a business we've spent 11, almost 12 years building. We have a lot of patients that rely on us, a lot of employees that rely on us, and most importantly, a lot of investors and shareholders who rely on us. So this is not something we can do and say, oh, never mind the risks associated, let's just create something, put it on the shelf, because if we get shut down tomorrow, it's not worth it. So all of the legalities have to be in place. All of the I's have to be dotted. All of the T's have to be crossed. And once we can do that, then we'll come to market. But we cannot come to market any sooner. And we would expect that none of our shareholders would want us to put the company at that kind of risk. But we believe in CBD. We believe in medical marijuana. And we're pushing forward on our own products in that area.
All right, well, speaking about products, let's talk about an update on new products and services.
So we have a number of products and services. One of the things that we are looking forward to doing this year is trying to, as we've done in all the whole years of the existence of Farmco, is diversify our revenue stream. Insurance is becoming a very, very difficult market. We cannot control what they pay us. We cannot control what the drugs cost. And it's become difficult to manage and plan for the business relying solely based on insurance reimbursement. So we have a number of products that we are working on, cash-based products, where we're working on nutrient depletion and promoting nutrient supplements, all natural, kosher supplements for a variety of ailments. As patients take medications for long periods of time, those medications, while improving their health in one area, will cause nutrient depletion in another, resulting in the need for increased dosage and increased medication over time. So we're working on our programs and kits for nutrient depletion. We're working on CBD as being one of them. We're working on, and this is one of the things that we've worked on previously, but in previous years, insurance had recognized the benefits of compounding. This year, they've decided they don't want to value the product as they should. But that does not mean that compounding and alternative pain therapies are out of reach for patients. And we are planning to aggressively promote our cash-based formula where the patients can still have non-opioid pain relief from the formulas that we have developed, and we have a track record for purity and effectiveness and positive health outcomes, and bringing that to all the states we're licensed in and showing that there's still access out there. It doesn't have to cost thousands of dollars a month for a patient to have access to appropriate pain management therapy. We have formulas that cost as little as $40 for a 30-day supply. Depending upon what the patient needs our cash-based formulas go up to as most $300 for a 30-day supply, depending upon those ingredients. So they're not out of reach for any patient that is suffering from a sports injury, that is suffering from surgery and surgical complications, that is suffering generally from low back pain, from sciatica, from neuropathy, from any number of things where we have stiffness in our joints, in our necks, in our backs, in our shoulders. So we're aggressively promoting all of our cash-based formula so that we can continue to bring that service to our patient base. We also are looking at our 340B services and becoming a 340B administrator. Nobody knows those services better than we do. Nobody knows reporting better than we do. Nobody has more accurate reporting than we do. So we want to now promote that service to 340B entities and have a service-based model. And that extends now to telehealth, telepharmacy, and DischargeRx. So now those are also non-insurance-based, service-based, business-to-business products that we will promote. One of the things that we raised the money here in 2019, we raised $1 million, is to build out the infrastructure and the technology for implementing DischargeRx and telepharmacy. We know we need to buy a certain number of kiosks. We know we need to deploy a certain number of the tablets to hospitals and clinics so that they can begin using the DischargeRx and telepharmacy platforms that we've already developed. And we're getting into more technological development, including delivery tracking, including prescription monitoring and digital MTM, where patients can see all of their medications, and we can give them recommendations on how to use those medications, how to administrate those medications, and how to limit their exposure to medications that they may not necessarily need. And that also plays into our opioid alternative therapy. So when we see patients that are on an opioid, tramadol, for instance, which isn't even a class 2 substance, a non-opioid alternative may serve them better than those medications. So we can provide, that'll give us opportunities to be more engaged with our patients. And then once we have those technologies, we can bring them to other healthcare providers. So those are some of the major products and services we're working on. And none of those products and services rely entirely on insurance being on board, and which is good for us because we know what we do. We know that we do it well, and we need to now bring that to patients and to doctors and to hospitals who are looking for these types of solutions.
Well, and finally, let's get an update on the new building.
So the new building is super exciting, and you can see me, you can hear me perk up immediately. Our administrative staff, so Progressive Care is going to move in next week. We are moving all of our desks and our computers and everything into the mezzanine floor of the building next week. I have room in that administrative area for an additional 6 people, which is so helpful for me because we don't have even floor space for another person to sit here and focus on some of these growth agendas. We're looking for a product manager. We're looking for a graphic designer. We're looking for a in-house marketing and social media person right now. We're looking for some in-house hospitalists and clinicians so to further our agenda. So it's very exciting that administration is going to be moving next week so we can begin really going full force on all of that, all of our growth agenda. Now we've gotten the architect. We're looking at how to build out the main floor. Now, I have always been one to have a open concept for the pharmacy. That way we can have the least amount of loss of time, the most efficient workflow. But we have 11,000 square feet of space in this building. We own this real estate. It's on our balance sheet, $1.8 million of real estate. And ample parking, everything we were looking for and hoping for is in this building. So now that we're looking at how to do the architectural design, we're going to be pulling permits this year. We're going to be beginning construction this year. Luckily, we don't have to do HVAC or too much of the infrastructure. All of the electrical is up to date. The roofing is up to date. The plumbing is up to date. So we don't have to do too much of that. It's simply removing a lot of walls, building out the aesthetics, and installing all of the operating infrastructure, desks and tables and counters and equipment. We have room for more automated equipment there, which is also great. Once we can have the closing on the acquisition, we're going to be looking at how to integrate the entire company into the building so that we don't have so many leases out there. Next year, our lease is up on Farmco 901, Farmco in North Miami Beach. We will be moving the entirety of that operation to the new building, leaving behind a kiosk-style pharmacy pickup area and pharmacy pickup and consultation area, as well as a more expanded retail space. Again, that expanded retail space will further into our agenda of promoting our nutritional expertise and CBD and all of the healthcare and wound care supplies that we specialize in for long-term care. Again, going back to the building, once we're in there, FPRX will integrate in there at some point once we have Farmco 901, Farmco North Miami Beach, in that building. We will most likely be running 2 shifts, so that building will be closed door, closed to the public, where no walk-ins would come, and then have 2 shifts. So we can increase capacity by another 100%, and then some once we have more automation. We're working with a number of partners. Our primary wholesaler, McKesson, and a couple of other people to improve our efficiency and reduce the cost of filling and billing and things like that so we can fill even more prescriptions out of even smaller space. But right now we're running very efficiently, and I cannot wait to move in. I cannot wait to begin expansion. I cannot wait to put the billboard on our roof that says Farmco. Here we are. Come and see us. Upgrade your pharmacy. People will be able to pass by us. If you're ever going down on 95 down to South Beach, you're going to pass by our pharmacy and you're going to see it from the highway. So it's an amazing location. It's so close. Deliveries from there will be so much quicker, so much more efficient. I just cannot talk about how happy I am about the move and what this means for the next phase of our future, how much development I can put there, how much MTM, how much telepharmacy, how much long-term care growth I can put in this, and how well I can make it because it's ours. I don't have to patch any more leases. I don't have to keep moving offices and have musical cubicles like I do now. It's going to be amazing for this company, and I just can't wait.
Well, then, any closing thoughts or comments for the listeners?
So I want to talk about, in my closing statement, the future. We are a fantastic pharmacy. We are an amazing pharmacy. And I don't use these words lightly. I don't like to do puffery. I don't like to make us seem better than we are. But as a pharmacy, what we do is second to none. What we offer to patients is second to none. What we offer to doctors is second to none. What we offer covered entities is second to none. And what we need to do now is get the insurance industry to begin to recognize the difference a good pharmacy makes and how valuable a good pharmacy is as a partner. And so today we are two stores. Today we are Palm Beach and North Miami Beach. We cover four or five counties. Tomorrow we're going to be four locations. Tomorrow we're going to be, if we look at 2020 sales, we're going to be $40 or $45 million in sales a year. And that's not even including any acquisitions we may do as we move forward. We are now a health services company. We are now a technology company. We are now leading the way the pharmacy industry should be. Every other company you're seeing now is looking at delivery. Well, we've been doing it since 2007. Every other company is looking at MTM. Well, we've been doing that since 2014. Every other company is looking at MedSync. Every other company is looking at unit dose packaging. All of those things are things we do. All of those things are things we have done. We are going to be one of the few companies that offers delivery and tracks the integrity of that prescription from the pharmacy door to the patient's hands. So we will be making sure, so all of your cold chain products, your vaccines, your insulin, your antibiotics, anything that needs to be kept cold, well, that temperature is about to be monitored from the time it leaves the pharmacy door to the time the patient gets it. Very few pharmacies are doing that, and we'll be one of the first that's doing it on a scale as large as ours. That was one of the benefits of going to the cold chain conference this year, is being able to work with some of these manufacturers and showing them that this is the delivery model. This is where the future of pharmacy is going. They need to come and work with us. And I've had nothing but calls since then from packaging manufacturers and cold chain manufacturers and even pharmaceutical manufacturers who have wanted to speak with us about how to manage the integrity of that product all the way to the close of the supply chain, all the way to the patient. So we're starting to get that recognition. You know, me speaking and me writing articles and all that is starting to pay off, starting to have its benefits. We're starting to have legitimacy for things that we develop, things like Telefarmco. We're talking about a lot of insurance companies are now recognizing the value that telemedicine has for rural patients, the value that telemedicine has for patients that cannot get to their doctors, then need more assistance. So now even insurance is recognizing that. And we have a platform that will allow us to do medication reconciliation and medication therapy management without having to have the patient come in. We have that platform, and it's a HIPAA-secured platform. Once we promote all of that and install all of that in the doctor's offices, you're going to start seeing more and more pharmacies looking to us and looking to see how they can align more with how we are trending and how we are growing. And I have not been, in my entire time here, I've been working with Pharmco since 2009, back before they were even part of Progressive Care. I have not been prouder of this company than I am today, and tomorrow I'll be prouder still. Tomorrow I will be neck deep in conversations with insurance companies, with wholesalers, with the acquisition target, with auditors, to get all of these things moving forward, because it's time that Farmco is recognized for what it is, which is a conglomerate. It is no longer the mom-and-pop store that it was in 2012 or 2007. We're past all that. We're a business. We're not playing business. We're a real business. And we want all of our shareholders to feel the same pride that we do. When you say you're a Progressive Care owner, when you say you're a Progressive Care shareholder, you should know that you're buying something real. You should know that you're buying something that makes a difference. You should know that you're part of something that is going to be big and going to matter in this healthcare industry. So I hope that on these calls and that you listen to me, that you feel that same sense of excitement and that same exuberance and that same pride that we all feel here. And I hope to continue to deliver the level of transparency and performance that you've come to expect from us. Thank you.
All right, everybody. For Sheetal Mars, this is Stuart Smith saying thanks so much for listening. And of course, keep those questions coming in. Have a wonderful evening.